Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take complex sources and, well, we distill them into clear, usable insights for you. Today, we're jumping into the science behind art therapy. It's fascinating stuff. For a long time, I think many saw art as, you know, maybe just a nice to have alongside real medical treatment. But the research we've got here, it paints a totally different picture. We're talking deep neurobiology, evidence-based stuff. We're going to explore how art isn't just adjunct therapy anymore. It's actually a fundamental tool, especially for healing trauma. And we'll look at how that science is being applied right now through platforms like Warriors Return, which comes out of the Simpergeist Institute.
Exactly. Our aim here is to really connect those dots for you. We'll go from the tiny scale, like, how does making a mark on paper actually change brain activity? All the way up to the bigger picture. How organizations like Semprergeist, often founded by people with direct experience, like veterans themselves, are harnessing this. And they're blending that lived experience with solid academic research. But first, we absolutely have to start with the basics. Why is creativity even important for humans? Why do we need it? Well, the sources suggest something pretty profound. Creativity isn't some optional extra. It's actually hardwired into how our brains operate. The brain is fundamentally a prediction machine.
A prediction machine.
Yeah. Its core job, really, is constantly taking in information, what we see, hear, remember, and predicting what happens next. It's all about survival, anticipating the future.
Okay, so if the brain's main gig is predicting, then being creative. That's just the prediction engine working well, like imagining good futures, innovating.
That's the idea. And the flip side is where mental health challenges can arise. When that prediction engine goes haywire, well, that's a problem. If your brain gets stuck constantly predicting negative outcomes, what does that feel like?
Anxiety, I'd imagine. Just dreading what's coming.
Right. And if it gets so bad that the brain just can't imagine any future or any positive one, that inability to anticipate anything good, that's linked to hopelessness, depression. It's like the core operating system is failing.
Wow. Okay, that connects to emotion then. Because those predictions aren't just logical, they're deeply emotional, right? We often think cognition is king, but the research seems to say emotion runs the show.
It really does. Emotion is the older system, the more powerful one.
Yeah.
It's driving our core survival instincts. You can almost say emotion is piloting the plane, and our rational mind is just trying to map the route after takeoff.
Huh, I like that analogy. And if that emotional system is suppressed or if we're isolated, it's not just feeling bad, it actually harms us physically.
Critically so. The sources are pretty stark on this. When you isolate that predictive emotional brain think chronic loneliness, it signals danger, threat, and that psychological distress. It triggers real physical changes, inflammation, massive stress responses. The outcomes can apparently be worse than chronic diseases like diabetes or even heart disease.
That's incredible. So the need to express ourselves, to connect, it's not trivial. It's fundamental to our physical health. So, okay, how does art fit in? How does it help release or process this in a way that, say, just talking doesn't always manage?
Think of art as a kind of biological process, almost like breathing or eating. We take things in, we process them, we release waste. Our senses are constantly taking in this huge flood of information. Art provides a nonverbal way to integrate all that sensory input, make sense of it internally, and then release it in a structured form.
Okay, structured form. That sounds different from just, you know, venting. If I just complain endlessly about something, that's release. But is it the same as making art about it?
Good question. There's a key difference, and the sources point to metaphor. Venting is often just raw, unprocessed emotions spilling out. It might even make you feel more agitated afterwards. Artistic expression, though, involves wrapping that emotion in a metaphor. It could be visual, like a painting, or a story, a piece of music, even movement.
Can you give a quick example? Like, how does that work?
Sure. Let's say someone dealing with trauma feels this constant internal chaos. That's the raw feeling. If they vent, they might just describe the chaos, maybe shout about it. But if they make art, they might paint a tangled mess of lines, or maybe sculpt something that feels like it's crumbling. That object, that image, becomes the metaphor for the chaos.
Ah, so it contains it.
Exactly, it contains it. And that allows the feeling to sort of transcend the immediate moment. It externalizes it. You can look at that painting of tangled lines and say, that represents how I feel. Instead of just being lost inside the feeling of I am chaos, that little bit of distance makes a huge difference.
Right, that makes sense. Okay, let's apply that. The metaphor, the externalizing, to the really tough cases, like severe psychological trauma. Because this is where the science gets really specific about why talking alone might not be enough.
Yeah, this is crucial. There's a mechanism the sources call the trauma bypass, What happens is, when someone tries to verbally recall a really traumatic event, brain scans often show that a key part of the left brain, the frontal cortex, including Broca's area, which handles expressive speech, actually powers down. It goes quiet.
So they literally can't find the words. The speech part of the brain just stops working properly.
Pretty much. It gets inhibited, frozen. But at the exact same moment, the right side of the brain, which deals with emotional arousal, threat detection, nonverbal stuff that goes into overdrive.
Oh, wow. So you've got this flood of intense emotion, maybe sensory fragments, fear. But the language center is offline.
Precisely. You're stuck in this raw, nonverbal, high alert state. That's why people might dissociate or have really strong physical reactions or just freeze up when trying to talk about it. There are no words available to map onto the experience.
Okay, the mouth is silenced, but the feeling is overwhelming. So how does picking up a paintbrush or a piece of clay help?
Because art making, drawing, sculpting, photography, whatever it is, activates those exact same highly aroused right hemisphere regions.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't need language to do it. Mm. It gives a direct outlet. A nonverbal pathway. You bypass the silent speech center entirely. You don't have to say chaos. You can show chaos, create it physically.
That's incredibly powerful. But wait, if they're not talking about it, how do we know they're actually processing it and not just like putting the bad feelings onto the canvas and leaving them there?
Ah, right. The art object itself isn't the endpoint. The vital step is what happens next. Processing the artwork with someone, usually a therapist. The therapist can then help the person look at this thing, they've created this externalized metaphor, and gently start attaching language to it. Tell me about these colors here. What does this shape feel like?
So you use the art as a bridge back to language.
Exactly. You're linking the visual emotional experience, which is strong in the right hemisphere, with the symbolic meaning and language processing in the left hemisphere. The sources call it hemispheric reintegration.
Hemispheric reintegration. So connecting the two sides of the brain again around the trauma.
Yes. It allows the emotional memory and the verbal narrative to finally connect. What was maybe just a terrifying, fragmented sensation starts to become a more coherent story, something manageable.
What does that feel like for the person, that reintegration?
It's often described as things starting to make sense. Like moving from just unbearable noise to hearing distinct notes. There's a sense of gaining perspective, maybe control, and importantly, distance. Remember how dominant vision is.
Mm.
That visual object, the artwork, provides a really potent way to put some space between me and the overwhelming feeling.
And this understanding is why we're seeing creative arts therapies become standard practice in some really serious settings, right? Like the mask-making protocol at NICOE, the National Intrepid Center of Excellence for service members with TBI and PTSD.
That mask protocol is a perfect illustration. Service members create these masks symbolizing different parts of their experience, maybe who they were before, the injury itself, the emotional fallout. They're using a visual language to express things, grief, injury, moral conflict that might be too difficult or, frankly, neurologically blocked to talk about directly. It bypasses the verbal shutdown.
Okay, so the science is solid. The clinical application is there. Now, let's pivot slightly. How is this knowledge being used outside of those intensive clinical settings? You mentioned the Sempergeist Institute.
Right. Sempergeist, founded by Dr. Dennis Stevens, is really focused on bridging this gap. Their mission is about advancing the evidence base, proving how creativity triggers these healing pathways in the brain. And what's really key is the blend. Dr. Stevens is a U.S. Coast Guard veteran himself, so combines that deep academic understanding with lived experience. The goal isn't just research for research's sake. It's about creating practical tools for resilience, for belonging, specifically within the military community.
And their main tool, this application, is Warrior's Return, which is a digital platform, right?
Right.
How does that translate this very physical sensory process into something digital?
Yeah, Warrior's Return takes these core principles, the need for metaphor, the power of symbols, integration, and builds a digital storytelling platform around them. It's designed for veterans and their families. The idea is to help transform traumatic experiences into narratives, fostering that resilience and sense of connection, but using digital tools, images, symbols, structured prompts within a community context online.
How does the digital format help with the metaphor part? Does it guide users?
It does. It can offer structured ways to engage. For instance, instead of just a blank page, it might offer prompts or libraries of images and symbols to help users build their narrative, their metaphor, piece by piece. It also lowers the barrier to entry. You can engage asynchronously, maybe late at night when feelings surface, without needing an immediate face-to-face. It makes the process more accessible. And the community aspect is vital, too. Sharing these symbolic stories, even digitally, helps combat the isolation that often comes with trauma. Seeing that others have similar struggles, finding that shared language of symbols can be incredibly validating.
That makes sense. And this platform approach also speaks to something else the sources emphasize: the need for sustained engagement. This isn't a one-off fix.
Absolutely critical. Neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to rewire itself, takes time and repetition. You're building new neural pathways for things like emotion regulation, and that requires practice. Consistent practice. Studies looking at long-term art therapy, some going for, up to 4 years, found much better outcomes compared to short-term stuff.
Better outcomes like?
Things like improved grief processing, being better able to handle frustration, regulating emotions more effectively, and just generally building deeper resilience. It takes time for those brain changes to really take hold and become stable.
So platforms like Warrior's Return, by being accessible and encouraging repeated use, are essentially facilitating that necessary neuroplastic change over the long haul.
That seems to be the goal. It recognizes that healing isn't a quick fix. It's more like training for a marathon. It requires accessible, ongoing practice in expressing and processing difficult experiences symbolically. So pulling it all together, art therapy isn't just a sidebar. It's tapping into fundamental brain mechanisms for memory, emotion, and integration mechanisms that might be unreachable through words alone, especially after trauma. We've seen the evidence that creative work actually modulates the brain networks involved in regulating our emotions and can really lessen symptoms of things like PTSD.
The evidence is definitely compelling. And just to leave everyone listening with something to think about, there was this fascinating study using brain imaging, FNIRS technology. They looked at brain activity during different tasks, and they found that doing something imaginative and creative, like just doodling freely, actually required less mental effort than doing a boring, repetitive task, like carefully tracing shapes.
Think about that. Your brain finds imaginative, expressive work easier, less demanding than monotonous routine. It's almost like your brain is built to be creative.
So the final thought for you is this. If your brain is actually wired to find creative expression less effortful than tedious tasks, what small expressive act might you be putting off? Maybe a quick sketch, snapping a photo, writing a few lines, something simple that could actually boost your well-being more easily than you think, something to chew on. Thanks for diving deep with us today.